Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Thank you so much for joining us here today. It's great to be back with you, Henrik, Red Ice TV. And today we have E. Michael Jones back on the show. I've been an admirer of his work for a long time. He's done a lot of good work in exposing the globalists, the people that are trying to subvert us, especially his angle on history and looking at social engineering and things like this. Just magnificent work. And today we're actually going to spend some time talking about a little girl from my neck of the woods, Greta Thunberg, which, of course, I don't know if you guys remember, I did a video on this. Now, of course, we're post-YouTube deletion here, so that video is currently not on YouTube. It's gone. It actually garnered about 480,000 views, I believe, before finally the channel was yanked. Some actually even speculated that it was because of that video that our channel was deleted. We haven't actually gotten any answers from YouTube, so we're uncertain. We don't know what specific video or what portion of which video it was that got our channel deleted. But some speculated that. There was a little bit too much truth that was getting out to a little bit too many people, so I'm not sure. But Greta Thunberg is a fascinating area to discuss. So E. Michael Jones, welcome back. Great to have you here again.
Thank you. Thank you. We are now undergoing the coldest summer in recent history here in South Bend, Indiana. It's the wind is howling out of the northwest right now. I can't go rowing today, but what can I say? It must be global warming, I guess.
Well, they changed their tune, didn't they? It was global warming. Now it's just climate change.
It's a safer bet. When the temperature drops to 20 below zero in South Bend, it's safer to call it climate change.
Exactly. The reason why the ice caps are, or you know, the ice sheet is growing in Antarctica is because of climate change, right? So
yeah. So you did a great job on that video exposing the whole connection with the Swedish energy sector and pointing out the fact that this is not something that a 16-year-old girl does all by herself. So, oddly enough.
Yeah, with, of course, some mental challenges as well at that. What was it? Mild autism. She's on the autism spectrum. I think that's the correct term. Yes. And she has obsessive-compulsive disorder. And again, in the video, we exposed that she obsesses about certain things. So when she was told originally about the fact that we're all going to virtually die, the Earth is going to go under here in 11 years, she became so obsessed with it. I still feel, despite the fact that she, of course, is levying a lot of criticism around, that we have an establishment, an elite behind her, which is taking advantage of this poor girl. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that if you read her mother's memoir, that becomes pretty clear. I'm really grateful that her mother wrote that memoir, because I think it really explains something. Now, in spite of herself, let's put it, I have to say that in spite of what she's trying to say. The gist of what she's saying in the memoir is that climate change it manifests itself in various ways throughout the world. So in the Sahel zone, it's drought. But in Sweden, it makes you crazy.
It seems like it's, well, certainly some people.
Is this true? So she has in the middle of her book, first of all, this is Melania Ehrman's memoir. Melania was famous. She was well known as an opera singer. And then at a certain point, she became really famous. She won the Eurovision Song Contest in 2006 in Moscow.
There she is. Let me pull it
and
up.
And she just shot off into the stratosphere of international fame at this point. And this is, I think, where pretty much the story begins, because at this point we have the family drama. This book is about family drama, but it's also about family drama in the context of Swedish social engineering. And so you have to kind of plot this along generational lines here. Now, we talked previously about the era of, let's say, Maria's parents era, which would be the Ingmar Bergman, Harry Schein, Olof Palme era, mm-hmm. where they basically decide that we're going to have heaven on earth here. It's called socialism. It's basically Christianity without Christ. And we're going to build a million apartment dwellings or houses. And everybody's going to be, the 80% in the country and 20% in the city is going to be reversed. Now it's going to be 80% living in apartments, and the countryside's going to be emptied out. And everybody's going to be happy because it's heaven on earth. And it looks as if it succeeded in her mother's generation. She was very successful. She basically knew how to play the system. She was a woman at a time when feminism is coming into its own. I mean, feminism is, at this point, the manifestation of Swedish social engineering. And she's at the crest of the wave, and she rides it very well. She becomes famous as an opera singer. And then, as I said, we come to this point where Greta, I can imagine this, it's not exactly in the book, but I can imagine Greta sitting at home watching Mommy get famous. You can watch the video of her mother singing at the Eurovision contest. And at this point, what we see, I think, is the downside of Swedish feminism, which is basically the children who are at home without mommy.
Yep.
Mommy's right. out being famous, and the children are at home. So Greta's 6 years old at this point. Everything's sort of going all right, and then something happens. Now, from Mommy's point of view, Greta is in school and she sees a film on that island of plastic refuse floating in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. And at this point, she goes crazy. This is the thesis of the book. Climate change drives Swedes crazy. It makes them crazy. Okay, but then she goes on to say that there are other things happening here. One of them happens to be puberty. This is the age, Greta reaches the age of 11, and she starts to go through puberty, and Mommy's not there. Mommy's really famous now, and Greta is going through something that every girl goes through, and it can be a frightening experience. The body's changing. She doesn't know what's going on. So who do you turn to? Well, you turn to the schools, and Sweden is famous for sex education. Sweden was the sexual paradise. Everybody looked to Sweden in the 1960s as the paradigm of sexual liberation. Now, in the Mommy's generation, there was a Swedish sex education film done in 1969. I forget the name of it, but it featured lots of blah, blah, blah discussion. And then right in the middle, there's a couple having sexual intercourse. Now, it's a film, so it's kind of explicit. But from an 11-year-old point of view, it's kind of, well, adults doing this. I don't think they would identify with the adults. That film got changed at around 2002, right around the time Grace is going to school. And now it's a cartoon. And it's not as explicit as the old sex ed film, but it's more targeted toward adolescents. And so what you have here is a black kid and a white girl in cartoon form going through the sex act. Now, this is more pressure, I think, on somebody like Greta here. Greta and her generation do not like sex ed. They did a survey. The sex education film that she's being pressured to look at is basically... It's basically teaches the boys to be predators and the girls to be victims. And that's pretty much what happens. And so the backstory here, we all know, well, she said that it was plastic floating in the ocean there. But I got sense it's more puberty and sex education here. And this 11-year-old girl is being subjected to this pressure. Now, the mommy says, Mrs. Erneman says, Greta would go into the girls' room and hide there because she was afraid of sexual assault.
Jeez.
The girls in the school, they did a survey of the girls in Swedish schools. The one thing they complained about the sex ed is that it doesn't talk about sexual assault, and they're subjected to sexual assault on a regular basis. So Greta's hiding out in the girls' room, trying to keep away from these boys. Mommy's not there. Mommy should be explaining things, and suddenly she just says, I've had enough. And what she does is she stops eating.
That's right. Yeah, I remember that. What age was he at this point? 11, you said? Was that
11? 11. Yeah. So yeah. She reaches puberty. She stops eating. She's given sex ed. She's being assaulted in the school, and she stops eating. Now, this is not craziness. This is completely rational, because what you do when you stop eating is you basically bring your mommy's career to a screeching halt, because mommy's afraid you're going to die, and you bring mommy back into the kitchen. And I think this is the reaction to Swedish feminism that we're seeing here. And the book, her book, gives lots of statistics saying that Greta was not alone in feeling this way.
Mm.
So you stop the career, mommy comes back into the kitchen, and now you have imposed this kind of neurotic order on the household that basically the Swedish social engineers abandoned when they embarked upon this million apartment project,
the whole social engineering thing. Yeah.
It's like Greta's on the train and she pulls the emergency brake on the train of Swedish socialism and social engineering and saying, I'm not eating anymore. And if you don't come back here, I'm going to starve to death. And of course, the family goes into a complete crisis.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, I didn't know that. Go ahead.
No, at this point, she establishes. But now the sister is Beata is in the same situation.
That's right.
The same thing happens to Beata. As soon as she reaches puberty, she stops eating. She goes into, and she has these neurotic rituals that she goes through. So what is this kind of neurosis? It's an attempt to impose order on a world that is going completely out of control. And completely out of control, by that I mean the sexual vulnerability that these girls feel in school under the auspices of the government. These are things that should be protecting them, and they're just handing them over to sexual predators, and they know it. And why is it neurosis? Why would we call it neurosis? Because you can't address it in an open fashion. Why can't you do that? Well, because mommy believes in feminism. You've got a whole class of people here, a whole generation who believe that this is what life is all about. This is social justice. This is the culmination of this great social experiment that we had in Sweden. And nobody knows how to critique it. What are you, crazy? You're against what? You're against rights for women? What are you, crazy? So nobody can critique it. And so what you have then is a neurosis kicking in, which is ultimately an expression of rationality here. So Greta says she only eats gnocchi, which are like Italian pierogies, or I don't know what.
Oh, those. Okay, gotcha. Yeah, I know.
It's like little pieces of pasta with potato inside. Okay, so she eats 5 gnocchi. And they have to be cooked in a certain way, and it takes her 2.5 hours to eat 5 gnocchi.
Jeez.
Now, there is a method to this madness, because it's bringing mommy back into the kitchen. Now, the father, this family did not break up. The father's there all the time. Father is an actor who is not as famous as the mother. And the father basically says, look, you're more famous, you earn more money, I'll take care of the kids. And so he's the house husband, he's been taking care of the kids. Well, that's an intact family. What's wrong with that? Well, I don't know, but Greta did not like it. Neither Greta nor Bianca would accept the fact that dad is cooking food. We got to get mommy back here into the kitchen so that she can cook the gnocchi, and this is the way we're going to solve this problem. Now, this seems to me is perfectly rational in some sense or other, but it's a protest against social engineering. It's a protest against feminism. It's a protest against mommy being outside the home. It's a protest against everything that these people hold as sacred. So what are we going to do? Well, we come to the solution to the problem. We all unite around climate change, because that's safe.
It's the bonding because element for the family.
It becomes the bond. This is what holds the family together. And suddenly, I mean, they're not at each other's throats anymore. They've finally found a common enemy. And this is what then unites the family and saves the family.
Mm. Interesting. Well, very interesting.
Well, I understand that. I think I understand the dynamics here. I think I understand the social dynamics, but it's really got nothing to do with climate. It has to do with social engineering and feminism. And what happened to Sweden after these forces completely took over? Now, you're there, I'm here. I know what we were subjected to in America when it came to social engineering. There were protest movements. I get the sense that this didn't exist in Sweden, that you had a unified culture, which is an advantage, except for the fact that when someone takes over a unified culture, there's no protest.
Right.
And so everybody is subjected to this. We know that something's wrong, but nobody can articulate it because it goes against what we are. In other words, it comes down to like this question of Swedish identity. Who are we? Who are we? You know, we used to be pagans, and then we were Catholics, and then we were Lutherans, and then we were socialists. Well, who are we? Who are we now? What is our commitment? Is it to the latest social engineering? It seems to be that way. It seems to be that way. They have nothing outside of this environment. No way to step out of this environment that they've all adopted and take some type of critical stance. And so the result is you have to go crazy in order to get your mother's attention. And so what you see here is this proliferation of mental illness in children.
And it's being encouraged by the system, by the people around
So the system is like the arsonist and the fireman all rolled up in one. Okay, they set the building on fire and then they rush around and put out the fire. This is the therapeutic state that has sort of evolved here, and this is what we're seeing with Greta and her family. It is long chapters of just taking her from one children's psychiatric hospital to another. And the father is desperate. Please tell us what's wrong with our child. At one point, he burst into tears. Can't you come up with a diagnosis? They're desperate because this is the only thing they have. They are incapable of stepping outside of this social environment and looking at it in a rational fashion. That's, I think, the story here.
Now, of course, what has happened is I think also the climate change is a surrogate, obviously, for something. And it's gotten a foothold, of course, in Sweden for a reason. And that's because of the identity has been eroded in many regards. That has been encouraged by the social engineers. They sought to reshape Sweden in a new image. Many new phenomena have actually risen up in Sweden even since the 60s. Now, of course, as you say, it's both climate change, but it's also multiculturalism and open borders and helping the rest of the world and these kinds of things. But it's a substitute for a spiritual belief. It's a substitute for something that's missing and lacking. And what's interesting, of course, with Greta Thunberg as well is that they have now kind of shaped her, and that's we're showing your cover here of your latest Culture Wars magazine. You have a great article about this in there, exposing all these things, all these links. But there is a religious, both tone, but also iconography around Greta Thunberg, which has, I think, subtly been encouraged, if you know what I mean. So talk to us about that and how you see that she's fulfilling a very important role here.
Yeah, well, so let's talk about God evaporates from Swedish life. Okay, the Swedish Lutheran Church was disestablished in the year 2000. So God has evaporated. Socialism has filled the vacuum that's taken its place. This means that human beings are responsible for everything because it has to be, because who else is there? If it's not human beings, if there's no God, it's got to be human beings. And so suddenly the same human beings who are in charge of everything are faced with something that is changing. Now, there's evidence. I go into this in the article. The chair of meteorology at MIT said CO2 emission has nothing to do with climate change. It couldn't possibly have anything to do with it. These are natural cycles. Well, once you get into natural cycles, you're starting heading toward God. And if God's in charge of the universe, well, then it's in good hands, right? Well, if he's not in charge, then it's in our hands and we've got to do something. And so you have this sense of doom here, you know, because everything depends on us. And what can we do? Well, we really can't do much, you know. And so they fasten desperately on these carbon dioxide emission protocols that were established by the United Nations. And a crucial figure was Olaf Palme here. He was heavily involved in establishing these CO2 protocols. So you're led into this position where we got to do something. We're desperate. We got to do something. But we can't do anything because it's we all kind of recognize. So they fixate obsessively on cutting down your CO2 footprint. So now you're not allowed to fly in an airplane. You know, so mommy's career, again, another nail in the coffin of mommy's career. So she can't fly around forever. And then you get these ridiculous gestures, these theatrical gestures, like Greta sailing to New York from Sweden. You're the one who said it was the Rothschilds' yacht.
Yeah, that's right. Let me pull this one up here. They owned by the Rothschilds, Baron Edmund, I think, or was one of them, owned by the Rothschilds, was sold later to two other German millionaires, multimillionaires, and they renamed it to Malizia II, which someone said meant malice, which was another kind of symbolic thing. But yes, it was Rothschild owned. And of course, as you expose in the article, Michael, it was actually more CO2 costly to make this whole spectacle for them than it would have been if they just took a plane to America to begin with for her now famous UN speech.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, it turns out that they have to fly the crew back across the Atlantic. So we're back to airplanes again. We're back to burning fossil fuels. We're back to the whole CO2 thing. So it's all a meaningless type of gesture here. But the general attitude behind this thing is doom. It's doom.
Yeah, apocalypse.
We've got 12 years. We've got 12 years. Do you realize how short a time that is? I mean, look at my watch. How much time have we wasted here talking about this when we should have been out doing something about climate change? And we only have now 11 years and some, you know, left. I mean, this is doom. This is complete hopelessness. And you can see this just kind of weighing on this poor little child who sees this as her only salvation. You know?
Yeah.
So I think, you know, we're in a moment now where over here, Greta Thunberg is completely forgotten. I mean, we've moved on to the new news cycle here. The problem here is that you when you do this, if you stick with the news cycle, you never have a chance to analyze anything. And so if you don't analyze anything, you're never going to understand anything.
Yeah.
But I think what happened here is that we need a new 16-year-old. I think they played that too many times. You know what? She looks mentally disturbed. She does. And
yeah,
she's not going.
A little bit off. She looks younger than she actually is as well, which is kind of part of this idea that they can sell it as. If this is a child, I mean, how dare you to speak up against this child? They see it as a personal attack on her if you criticize the proposals that she's coming with.
Yeah, I don't know whether you saw the Fox News clip about
this. I did. I included it. You mean the when they're talking about her being mentally challenged? Michael Knowles?
So
I played it in the video.
One guy mentions something that it's obvious from the way she talks, but her mother kind of talks about it in the book.
Yep.
Not only is she mentally disturbed, but this is a gift. This is why we should listen to her. You know, so the mother brags about it. And then this other thug, I forget his name now, but he's on. There's the guy, you know.
Yeah, Michael Knowles here. Yep.
And the other thug comes on and starts insulting him. What do you mean, skinny boy? You know, apologize. Who do you think you are? And of course, this thuggish behavior gets rewarded by Fox News because they ban Knowles from ever coming back
again. And they issued an apology to the family and to Greta Thunberg as well when it's admitted that she has these mental problems, right? He didn't say anything that was offensive or whatever. It's reality.
No, it's not admitting something. They're bragging about it.
Right.
If the fact that Greta is mentally disturbed means she can see carbon dioxide.
That's right.
This is her mother
talking
about. She can see that carbon dioxide coming up out of the. She's a visionary. She's a saint.
She has psychic powers too. Yeah.
And she's got psychic powers because she's mentally ill. So at this point, you're starting to see the whole gestalt, the bigger picture here, which is now Michel Foucault. Michel Foucault enters the picture at this point because he's the guy who talked about insane asylums as the repository of all of these visionaries who really had an alternative view of reality. There's no such thing as mental illness. And where did he get these ideas? Well, he went to Sweden. It's coming back again to Sweden. Foucault ends up spending, I think, 3 years in Uppsala at the university teaching French and getting annoyed at the Swedes because they're too tolerant.
Interesting. That is very interesting.
It is. It's exactly because this is it, now you're getting to the heart of Foucault as well. Foucault is a Catholic, raised as a Catholic in France, who struggled with homosexuality during his adolescent years, attempted suicide a number of times, and ended up wanting to be punished. He wanted to be punished for his homosexuality because he knew in a perverse way that it was wrong. And so he got his wish when he ended up in San Francisco, and he ended up in the bathhouses of San Francisco, where he engaged in sadomasochism, which is a form of punishment, basically, for what he knew was wrong. Now, Sweden is the antithesis of this. That's why he didn't like Sweden, because they didn't punish him because he was a pervert. This is so what you're seeing here is this kind of picture that's emerging here because Foucault has become the kind of house philosopher of social engineering now at this stage of the game. Anyone who is different has privilege. And if you are mentally ill, you have special privileges. You're a visionary, as I said before, and everyone is supposed to listen to you because you're marginalized in a number of different ways here, because you're mentally ill, because you're a girl, because you're a female, because of all of these things taken together.
Yeah, minority status, what have you, anything that that works to push the majority culture to the side. And they always use these kinds of, whether it's a group or an individual or whatever it is, it's always used as a sledgehammer against established traditional culture. It's not just that they can be there and do their thing. It's predicated on the fact that whatever is established needs to be destroyed and broken down, right?
Yes, and so this was Foucault's implementation of Nietzsche. He loved Nietzsche, and Nietzsche's program was the transvaluation of all values, the Umwertung aller Werte. And that's what we're seeing in our day. And now you see climate change can be integrated into that assault on cultures throughout the world. That's what we're seeing here.
Interesting. Why don't we also, one thing I do want to talk about here in this portion we're doing in this segment with you, Michael, is the connections as well, and again reestablish the fact that it's not her rise to fame was not organic. You exposed that in the article that you wrote as well. We know about the early meetings between, of course, Ingmar Rentzog, the mother, Malena Enman. They were on a stage together. This guy, who's from a marketing background, really, he just happened to walk on the same path where Greta Thunberg was sitting the first day she was doing her hunger strike for the climate, August 20th or whatever it was, 2018, I think it was. And he's just happened to walk by. He has his cell phone ready, takes a snapshot, puts it on his profile pages. And again, he's behind, I forgot to mention that, he's behind a group called... We Don't Have Time.
And we don't have time.
All of these groups, by the way, are, I don't know if you got to the part in the video what I did where I talked about how they're all time obsessed. Every single organization that's popping up in relation to climate change has this urgency issue. It's a now, don't think, we can't be rational about this. We have to act now. There's no more time, we're running out. Just hand over power, hand over your money, hand over everything, otherwise you will die. It's this pressure campaign. And again, it's advertisement-based. These are subversive techniques used by marketing people.
Yeah. I think the time thing is a function of atheism. There's time is running out. I think that atheism leads to a sense of doom. And I think that this is a manifestation of it. And so time is running out. And so this means mandates desperate measures. The problem is that desperate measures are starting to backfire. I don't know whether you saw the videos of the Extinction Rebellion demonstrations in London.
I did. Yeah, we talked about it.
But anyway, there's one of them is these guys climb on top of the subway. The underground. We have different words for it here. Okay, so this is mass transportation, which is a good idea, right? In terms of climate, in terms of ecology. That's a good idea. These trains run on electricity. That's a good idea. This is all better than individual combustion engines clogging the streets and everything else. So what's the protest about? What are you protesting? Are you saying that people should not be able to move from one part of London to another?
Shut down civilization. That's what it's about. Yep.
So they climb on top of the train, and what they do is provoke a reaction. So there's a mob down there. These people need to get home. They've been working all day, and there's some lunatic on top of the train. So they put up a ladder, and they drag the guy down, and they beat him up.
Yeah.
This is a sign here, I think, that it's starting to backfire.
And you see these images here, too? It's death. They have coffins and hourglass as their symbol, their logo. Time is running out. There's a Saturn connection even in that with the hourglass, Cronus, the time measurement, etc. It's all very symbolic, you know?
Yeah, it is. And I think it's an atheistic religion, a doom religion, a death cult. That's what we're seeing here. That's what this has led to. And at a certain point, you have to look for psychological explanations here. I think that's what I had to do with Greta, and thankfully her mother provided the background and the data that allows you to come up with these psychological explanations.
Yeah, explaining why she is the way she is, and then that she was somehow I kind of exposed that in the video too. It wasn't that she was selected for that very specific reason, but it turned out very good for them that this is what she had, these things. It was a contest. I don't know if you recall that there was a contest that was made. These were winners from an open ad in one of the bigger Swedish newspapers regarding to climate, I believe. There was a number of kids that were writing contributions for that. Greta, I believe, got second place for that, and one of these guys, I forget, is Bo Thorén, that's right. He major player in the climate field in Sweden and stuff like that too. He's trying to make one of our bigger, we call them landskap, which is kind of like a state in America, but one of them needs to go gas-free, the whole state needs to go gas-free kind of thing. He reached out to all these winners of this op-ed prize in the newspaper, and Greta was the only one that actually replied. And he had monitored the school shooting that took place in Florida with all these kids, like David Hogg and the kind of the way that they were marketed, kind of in a similar way to try to disarm America. He'd been watching that and wanted to mimic something similar in Sweden related to climate. So, you know, it's very interesting, the parallels there.
Yeah, it's very clever. And the guy who discovered her also apparently went to one of Al Gore's schools. Or seminar.
Yeah, Ingmar Ensog, he was educated by Al Gore. Yep.
That's yeah, right. Al Gore. So there's that connection. And it also opens up a whole new way of basically intimidating people by saying that the world is coming to an end. So it's like a millennialist cult or something like that. And that you have to do what we say or else what? Or else we're all going to die.
That's right. Yep. You better hand over your power, your money, everything. Let us be in charge. It's the global elite.
Yeah. So it's again, we see proxy warriors for the oligarchs. This time it's little girls. Yeah. It reminded me of the child soldiers in Africa a little bit. You know?
Yeah, it's equally sinister. It's equally despicable to see that there's people that push kids in front of them to say, you take the hits, you take the blame. I mean, look at Greta Thunberg. She has been vehemently not attacked, but criticized, and there's a lot of heat around her too, because she is kind of a representative for this message. And not everyone does agree, by the way. There's a lot of dissenting views, thankfully. The whole climate ordeal and debacle. Al Gore, 10 years ago, rising sea levels, we're all going to die. He had to go underground after that, after the climate gate. Remember that, 2010, CRU?
That's right. That's a really important chapter in this whole story.
Yeah.
The University of East Anglia, the emails became public in 2009 about them fudging the data. We're going to have to correct the data to suit the conclusion we want to come to. This obliterated the credibility of what they were doing.
That's
and
right.
Yet it just got dropped. It all went down the memory hole.
It did. Yeah, go ahead.
One sign that it didn't was that Prince Charles, shortly thereafter, gave a really impassioned speech, looking us in the eyes and saying, well, let's not quibble about details, right? We all know it's true. Well, no, we don't all know it's true.
At 1.5 degrees. 1.5 degrees, Michael. That is a detail in the scheme of things. If you look back in the record of ups and downs in the climate, in these cyclical, is it, we can look at the solar cycles, about 11 years. That's one factor, depending on activity on the sun, that contributes to radically, it contributes to different temperatures and cycles on the Earth and whatnot. But you have it in the article right here. It says, it was the IPCC's predictions about carbon dioxide which played a crucial role in converting Greta's mother to the climate change cause. And the IPCC, they based the majority of where they got their data from was from CRU, the Climate Research Unit at East Anglia University. If they fubbed them numbers, if they put these boxes where they measure the temperature at parking lots next to man-made buildings where you have an artificial increase of temperature because of accumulation and stuff like that, all of this was exposed back in 2010. All of it.
Yeah, yeah. And then it went all down the memory hole. And now it's come back.
Come back.
So the good news is that her arrival got us to look back and find out what was really going on. So, you know, that's good.
That's good. Yeah, that is good.
We can do that because I think we all know the situation better thanks to Greta Thunberg. And we know her problems, her situation better thanks to her mother's memoir.
Yeah.
So it was good. It was good that it happened, but only if you take the time to look into it. And that's the whole point here. It's like they hit you with this thing and then, all right, we're onto something else now. Let's forget about that before you have time to do any research into the thing, you know?
Yeah, well, we don't have time. that's what their message is.
We don't have time. The world's coming to an end, so don't write that article.
Exactly. That's right. Yep. Be busy. Let me play that portion. I think since it's not on YouTube, it could be good to squeeze that in this interview here just to show there's a social democratic faction in Sweden, which is... It's the establishment, right? Yes, there are some conservative forces with it, like moderate party and stuff, but that's been the major power in Sweden. They have one foot in the energy sector, another in the social democratic or even socialist international. That's why she's at the UN. The current head, Antonio Guterres, is a former head of Socialist International. It's all kind of meshed in with each other. But we can play that just to demonstrate that the people in Kiev, they haven't seen that. I think it's just a couple of minutes long. So check this out here, Michael.
Are other people orbiting Greta seeking to benefit politically and financially from her now world-famous campaign for climate justice? So hang on for this one here. Rensog and his CEO David Olsson have backgrounds in finance, not environmental activism. Rensog is the founder of Leica, an investment relations company, and Olsson with Svenska Bostadsfonden, one of Sweden's biggest real estate funds, whose board, Rensog, joined in June 2017. We Don't Have Time's investors include Gustav Stenbeck, whose family controlled Kinnevik, one of Sweden's largest investment corporations. In May 2018, Rensog and Olsson of We Don't Have Time became chairman and a board member of a think tank called Global Utmaning, Global Challenge.
The Time logo there.
Its founder, Kristina Persson, is an heir to an industrial fortune. She is a career trade unionist and a social democrat politician, going back all the way to the golden age of Olof Palme of the Social Democratic Party. She is also an ex-deputy governor of Sweden's central bank and a New Ager who has discussed her reincarnations and communications with the dead. Between 2014 and 2016, Persson served as Minister for the Future in the Social Democratic government of Prime Minister Stefan Löfven. Petter Skogar, president of Sweden's biggest employers association, is on Global Challenge's 10-person board. So is Johan Lindholm, chairman of the Union of Construction Workers and member of the Social Democrats Executive Board. So is Anders Wijkman, the vice president of the Club of Rome, chair of the Environmental Objectives Council, and he was also invited in February 2018 to Bo Thorén's event that sought to organize youth mobilization that we discussed earlier. Now, the anti-growth Club of Rome that Wijkman is vice president of is famous for its alarmist 1972 report, A Limit to Growth. And that became the cornerstone of the climate emergency campaign that now is beginning to pick up tremendous amount of speed. In December 2018, We Don't Have Time and Global Challenge launched the Club of Rome's latest vision of the apocalypse called the Climate Emergency Plan. Katarina Nystedt Ringborg, another board member of Global Challenge, is the former CEO of Swedish Water, advisor at IEA, the International Energy Agency, and former vice president at Swiss energy giant ABB. Katarina Ringborg is also a member of green energy venture capital firm Sustainable Energy Angels. Its members are a who's who of the Swedish energy sector. Sustainable Energy Angels president and chair of the investment committee are ex-ABB personnel, and so are four of its 17 members. It's an incestuous circus of energy sector social democrats that are seeking to transform the political climate and to place themselves in a leading position as they hope the world begins to restructure its energy needs.
All right, that's it. So interesting, huh? It's very incestuous. That's the point.
It's a Swedish conspiracy.
Yeah, it's those Swedes,
the Swedes are going to take over the world.
That's funny. Just like the Amish, huh? They're going at it. All right. Interesting.
Thanks for pointing that out. That was a great job you did there.
Thank you. Here's a little plug as well, by the way. A promotional video for We Don't Have Time, which is just hysterical in its the animations that they use for this and stuff like that. But again, I think that this is working because of a lack we've turned our back on a spiritual belief. Now, of course, you and me differ. We have different beliefs regarding that. But I think we can agree on the fact that there's something missing, which is attracting people. And I think that these marketing forces, they know this, and that's why how they can play on that. And that's why a lot of people, and not the majority, but a lot of people are attracted to these kinds of ideas, because it's filling a hole that people have in their lives, need for spirituality. What's your take on that?
Yeah, it's a function of atheism. If there's no God, who's in charge? Who's in charge? And the answer is, well, the rich and powerful, they're in charge. And they're going to tell you what to think, and they're going to scare you. Because, you know, if no one's in charge, we're all in trouble. I think it's all a function of that. I think people sincerely believe that. They become deranged because of, out of fear. They're so full of fear because of there's nobody out there. There's nothing out there. It's just us all alone in the universe and blah, blah, blah. And they become obsessed with these fears, and these movements, in some sense, calm their fears. You've got to do something. So at least you have something to do. You know what to do when you get up in the morning, and what to worry about, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, if this is in the hands of humans, right? There's no one here to
it has
take
to be
charge
by process of elimination. If there's no God, then everything is in human hands. And if that's the case, well, then it has to be CO2. We are the ones who have to be the cause. It can't be some type of other plan. It can't be like cycles. It can't be part of God's plan, divine providence, whatever you want to call it, because we don't believe in those things anymore. So we must be the cause, and so therefore it has to be CO2. And so therefore you have to listen to us, because we have to do something about carbon dioxide. That's the logic, I think, that's at work here.
What about the deindustrialization, that the advancements that we have made that has made? And again, I'm not for irresponsible, anything like that. I detail that in the video too. Not for irresponsibly not taking care of being custodians of the earth, or whatever you want to call it. We do have to take responsibility. We have invented a lot of things which are massively damaging. But I think there's a denial of the real environmental dangers. They don't talk about the plastics. They don't even direct too much criticism against the nations that are actually polluting the most right now. The West has actually already done a lot to mitigate and to try to improve things and stuff like that. But I see this as a plan to deindustrialize, taking away the advancement and the ingenuity that we've come up with, which has made life considerably easier and better. I mean, there's more people now on the planet than ever. And that would have been I'm not saying that's good or bad or whatever. I think it's too many people, but whatever. It's like, we wouldn't have been able to do that if it wasn't for the industrialization and going through certain things with agriculture and stuff like that. It looks like they're trying to take that away and get us back into some kind of feudal system or something like that. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I spent time in East Africa last year, in February. And the problem in East Africa is that there are too few people in relation to the space that they're inhabiting. In Tanzania, it's obvious. When you fly over Tanzania, it's completely empty, and it's getting emptier because there's no development there. And development here is simple things like water pumps. The pumps are all I did a book, it's called The Broken Pump in Tanzania, which talks about this whole infrastructure problem and development in this regard, and the role that socialism played in Tanzania in basically stalling development. Julius Nyerere was the idol of the socialist movement, and he could always count on Olof Palme for giving him money. And the money would come back to Tanzania, and it would never get out of Dar es Salaam because you had this corrupt nomenclature that kept all the money. So what you're saying here is that the problem is development. And then what you're saying beyond that is the problem is people. And then you're right back there in the old population control thing, which I think is the basis of all of these climate movements. It all comes back to overpopulation, the talk that there are too many people, we have to reduce the population, and so on and so forth, rather than any type of development. Development is simply not taking place in East Africa. It's being prevented. So the main thing, I wrote another article about this, but I mean, the main thing that's inhibiting economic development in Kenya is used clothing. They import used clothing. And as a result, nobody plants cotton and nobody cuts wool. Nobody grows sheep and uses the wool and weaves cloth. Cloth is the basis for every economy which ever developed in the world. It was the basis for the Florence moving into a money economy. It was the basis for economic development in Germany in the 16th century, England in the 18th century, America in the 19th century, and China and Japan in the 20th century. You can't get development without basic producing basic things like cloth. Cloth is the main engine driving development here. So what happened here? The politicians in East Africa woke up to the fact they banned the importation of used clothing. Good. That's a good idea. That's a good use of tariffs. That's exactly what the United States and Germany did in the 19th century to keep out cheap English cotton. What happened then? The Jewish rag pickers in New Jersey complained to the Treasury Department and Mr. Mnuchin, threatened them with sanctions, economic sanctions, and all of the East African countries except Rwanda backed down and removed their tariffs. This is the type of thing that's going on behind the scene. This is the way the American empire wields its economic power over people. And this is the way it basically cripples development. We have the entire East economies of East Africa, Kenya, Uganda, Tanzania, those places, being held hostage by Jewish ragpickers from New Jersey because they have the political clout to impose sanctions. This is a situation. Climate change distracts everyone from this type of reality. That, I think, is the purpose of this theater, this theatrical performance of Greta arriving by yacht at New York and testifying in front of the United Nations.
Yeah, where they make it seem that she was scolding the elites in the audience at the UN, or for that matter at the IMF meetings or the World Bank Davos Switzerland meetings and stuff like that. Meantime, of course, they're actually standing up and applauding because they're using her. They want this to levy this message against them. It's also a message of guilt, obviously, that's saying, if you don't do anything about this, you're neglecting the future of children. It's up to the adults now to do what the children want us to do. There's a Swedish psychologist who wrote the book When the Kids Take Over or something like that. It was about how the adults in Sweden had essentially let go, and now it's a nation run by the kids.
I think that's what happened with Greta and her mother. This was a world out of control. Greta took control of the family.
That's right, yeah.
And she did it by refusing to eat. She brought this kind of, it was order. It was a neurotic and kind of tyrannical order, but she imposed her own order on the family. That's how she did it.
Yeah.
And so there is, and I think what you see here is guilt in the older generation. Guilt over their sexual practices, guilt over all sorts of things, abortion, contraception, everything. Guilt toward putting children in daycare centers, handing them over to the state schools, the sex ed thing, all that type of stuff is in the background of these famous women who are just running around the world. And suddenly it clicks in and she can access this guilt and use it as a form of control. That's what happened in the family.
Indeed. We're going to wrap up here in a little bit. We're going for about 50 minutes. Of course, people can read more about this in the latest issue of Culture Wars magazine. Why don't you tell us a bit about that, your websites, your Twitter, where you want people to follow you, your BitChute, I guess, now in these days of YouTube terminations.
I, Yeah, I'm sorry to hear that you got deplatformed. I wrote a note to the people saying that they should either explain to you why this happened to you or they should put you back on. But this is like the worst of both worlds. And what I realized, we came close not too long ago, and we realized basically that this is the main point of purpose of psychological warfare is to prevent communication between subject peoples. That is why YouTube is being manipulated as a form of psychological warfare. So the antidote to that is establishing secure channels of communication, which you can do by going on to culturewars.com. All of the books, you were showing them up on the screen there, all of these books, the magazines, the podcast, all of these things are available. And you will get, if you buy something from us, you will get on our list, and we will be able to communicate to you, for example, when the Logos book is going to be available and other things like that. So we will establish communication on our terms rather than all your data going to Google and them using it for data mining and stuff like that. So I think it's important that we keep these networks alive and try to kind of move them to where they benefit us and not just the people who have the platforms.
That's absolutely right. People, check out culturewars.com. You have all the links from there to the YouTubes, to, of course, the bookstore, which is fidelitypress.org. Many titles there for you to check out as well. We've talked about some of them over the last few years. We've had Michael as a guest on and off here and there. We've talked about a lot of good books that he has. The Jewish Revolutionary Spirit, excellent book, Libido Dominandi. I think that was one of the first ones we discussed together. Excellent work. So check them out. They're right there on the website. Anything else to plug? I guess you can follow Michael E. Michael Jones on Twitter as well. It's at E. Michael Jones 1.
Yes. Twitter. Tweeting on a regular basis.
That's right. Getting out some good videos as well. You guys are doing a good job on that, on kind of... the shorter videos that kind of is a good to get the message out in a good way. And then, of course, people can check out the BitChute if they want to have some of the longer, interviews and things like that you do as well. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. So we're trying to, cope with the situation as it exists.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's great having you back. Thank you again. We got to have you back sooner rather than later. But thank you for joining us today. Really appreciate it. Keep up the good work, and folks out there, support E. Michael Jones and his work, and get some of the books and the magazine as well.
Thanks, Henry.
Thank you.